Hi, everybody. Welcome back. Sorry for the little delay getting started. We have a search demo that we're going to do probably on Wednesday. And Sergio was showing me what it looked like at the moment. She's going to clean it up a little bit, and then it should be ready to present on Wednesday. All right, let's see what else is going on. All right. All right, so homework 4 is coming out today. Something to keep you distracted. Fewer questions than the previous ones. The last person who needed to take the midterm took it about an hour ago, so I'll be able to release the exams. I'll probably do that by Wednesday. Half of the grades are already posted on Sakai, so if you want to know what your raw total is, half of you anyway, it's up there. I don't know what the distribution is yet because I haven't gotten everybody up there yet, but when I do, I'll be able to assign letter grades to the numbers. But I'm hoping it'll be like in the 90s A, in the 80s B, in the 60s C or D. We'll see how that goes. I haven't seen any in the 70s yet. There's this hole in the distribution. But we'll see. We'll see what happens when I finish all the other ones. All right. Any comments, questions, demands about that? What I'd like to do start off, instead of going right into the quizzes, the clicker quizzes, we're going to do a kind of American Idol, Scratch Idol, the scratch-off. So here's how the scratch-off went. So you guys submitted scratch programs with your last homework that included something that did some kind of a song and something that did a Halloween card. Bethany, when she was grading, she selected 8 of the students as having submitted very good programs. Now there's 8 students, but each of them submitted 2 programs. So I took those 16 programs and I ran them all myself with my kids behind me watching, at least one of whom is my 9-year-old is a very good scratch programmer. So she could really appreciate when people did things that were cool, that were nice, that were visually pleasing. So she was kind of my expert rater. And so from that, we whittled it down to 10 finalists, which I randomly assigned to 2 different sets of 5. Why 5? Because you've got 5 buttons on your clicker. So what we're going to do is I'm going to show you the first 5. We'll play each of the scratch programs so you can see what they do, and then you'll vote. Whoever gets the highest total in the first batch gets this lovely certificate, Scratch Off Winner, which reads, for scratching above and beyond the subroutine call of duty. It's got the little scratch cat saying congratulations, and it has a little snippet of a little scratch strip that says, while flag is clicked, say congratulations forever, play sound applause, and wait. Great Insights in Computer Science, CS105, Rutgers University, Fall 2008. And then it's fake signed by me and by the TAs. So, all right, so let's see. Here's the first batch. The 5 nominees, which I will now show you. All right, the card is the first one. These are last year's nominees. Not so helpful. There we go. All right. So you might want to, you know, mark down or remember which ones you like and why you like them. This is from the song category. one, and I was thinking, how did they do that? So this, the visual here is actually just all on the background. So why is the voice bubble coming out of that guy's mouth? Because there's an actual separate sprite that's hidden. It's some other, it's like a dragon or something, but it doesn't matter because it's been hidden. And the voice is coming out of the dragon's mouth. But the dragon is placed on top of Paul McCartney. It's sort of his demon. Anyway, it goes on like that. Into the line of the dark black night. It's got the timing, it's got the nice visual. I like the cartoon very much. I seem to be partial to the Beatles too. All right, that was choice B. Choice C, is this song? Little turns and little waits, playing the cricket sound. Although I might not be able to scroll and show you the whole thing. So there's this interesting repeat until empty hexagon loop, which I think is really the same as a forever loop. So repeat until forever, turn 15 degrees, wait a little bit, turn 15 degrees the other way, wait a little bit. I'm pretty sure that that's this, right? It's just rotating a little bit, pausing, and then rotating the other way. There's also a part which I think is not visible, which I don't think I can show you because the screen's not big enough, but where the dancing at the end is done with a bunch of calls to random. So it's actually picking a random place on the screen and then gliding over there and then, you know, waiting a little bit and then gliding to the next place. So it's not too bad, though. That could have been in a loop, but I wish I could show you that. All right, so here's where we are. I showed you five so far. The Ghost Bat one, Beatles cartoon, Hip Hop, Letter Spin, and Bamba. So cast your votes. Keeping in mind, it's, you know, how interesting is the program, not just how fun is the song. All right. Anyone need a little more time to think? Three. All right, three, two, one. All right, we're stopping voting. The winner is Choice C by quite a bit. That's the hip hop song, least in song. Do we show, is he here? Or she here? Bummer. Who is Beeston? I can look that up in the class list. All right, well, this lovely scratch-off winner is not going to be clean. Bummer. Well, all right, but anyway, thank you for voting. We have five more to go. Maybe vote for somebody. All right, some of the same people, but also some different people this time. All right, so grab our card. Here, it's a little bit hard to do.
broadcast went up to watch.
It looks like it's using subroutines. I'm not sure if it's using them in an interesting way. It seems to just be breaking up the program a little bit. Point towards sprite 1, move 10 steps. This is sprite 1. How can it point towards itself? Move 10 steps, point towards sprite 1, move 10 steps. I have no idea what that does. Bye, Spider. All right. That was B. C. Another Halloween card. All right. This one gives me instructions. It says press space and don't bother local spirits. Back and forth, bouncing off the walls, shadow under the spirit. Whenever I hit space bar, it says happy Halloween. And then I think that goes away. Nice kind of, not exactly spooky song, but folksy song. Alright, so how does this work? What's going on here? So when the flag is clicked, it broadcasts go and waits. When I receive go, it repeats 100 times, though we didn't wait for the full sequence here. Glides to a position. If the X position of Sprite 2, that's the demon, equals 144, I assume that's maybe one of the borders. So this person could have used the if touching border or something like that, but just testing if it makes it all the way to the side. If it is, then it switches to a different costume. Oh, what? Interesting, which you don't have to do. You can just flip it. You don't have to have separate costumes for the two different directions. Glide 3 seconds to another position. This isn't necessary either, because it's already glided to that position. So we don't need to hit. And then it switches to the other way. Okay, so it's just bouncing back and forth 100 times like that. It's got 2 glides in a row here. It glides 0 second glide to, that's interesting. And neither of those are necessary. When space is pressed, broadcast stop. When I receive sigh, play duck sound. We didn't see that. How do you suppose you make that happen? I don't know. I didn't click on anything. Maybe I should have clicked on anything. Didn't seem to do anything. One thing that I thought was really cute is the shadow is not part of the ghost. Right? The shadow is a completely separate sprite. So you can move them independently of one another. So how the heck did why did the shadow follow the ghost? Or the spirit or whatever it is. So that's actually kind of cute. It's just running a forever loop that says, make my x-coordinate be the x-coordinate of the ghost. In other words, the shadow is watching the ghost and it sets its x position to wherever the ghost's x position is. So as a result, it follows the ghost around underneath. So that's kind of cool. But notice it doesn't say anything about the Y position of the shadow. So if we do something like this, but it is pretty funny that it gets, it's a pretty good effect when it's underneath.
Just right there, just click on the side.
Yeah, that's great.
Click on what? Choice C, choice D, beast in car. There we go. All right, press space bar to start. Okay. Okay, it's telling me to click on it to save it. All right, here we go. Clicking quickly. Here I am, clicking. Too late.
Happy Halloween!
And it flies around. And apparently, space bar makes it starting in from scratch, or from the beginning. All right. So when my daughter saw this, she felt like I had done this horrible thing by not clicking fast enough and saving it from its unfortunate transformation into a bat. But in fact, whenever you click on the cat, at any point during the program, it turns into a bat and says, too late. So you can even do it before it says, no, save me, and it will turn into a bat and say, too late. So there really is no way to win this game. You can just feel bad about it. All right, that was D, and this is the last one, E. Another card. All right. All right, I click the green flag. Oh, something's happening. Seconds and then starts the next one. So they actually are slightly overlapped, which is a nice audio effect. The critter glides and then it says this message briefly, and then when you click on it, it switches to the next costume. So that's why we see it switching back and forth between the ghost and the, dementor or whatever it is. Sets the size smaller though, I didn't notice that. Goes to the front, screams, and then glides into a series of positions and says Happy Halloween. That's pretty much what we saw it do. Alrighty, alright, so here's the list again of the second batch. The flying witch is A, the spider is B, that's the itsy bitsy spider. The spirit, one of the spirits was C, the spooky cat that turns into a bat was D, and the graveyard at the end was E. All right, everybody get your clicks in. All right, stopping. Winner is E. Congratulations, E. All right. Is Mertens here?
He's not.
We should re-vote and keep doing it until somebody's actually here.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, that was fun. All right, moving on. We learned a little bit. All right, so when we left off last time, we were talking about various kinds of growth rates. So, especially with songs last time, was I talking about NP completeness? Did I talk about that? I think so. Yeah. All right. So just to give you another chance to practice with the growth rate, I think that was a week ago that I talked about big O of n, big O of n squared, big O of n log n, that kind of stuff. So here's two more examples that you can practice on those. This question is as follows. So you see, here's a little grid. You can think of it as being a city with n streets and n avenues. So it's an n by n city blocks. And we're going to walk from one corner of the city to the other corner of the city, alternating directions as we go. So up a block, then over a block, and up a block, and over a block, until we get to the top corner. And the question is, how far did we go? How many steps did we take? Was it A, big O of log n, B, big O of n, C, big O of n log n, D, big O of n squared, or E, big O of 2 raised to the power n, 2 to the n? So keep in mind, a useful thing to do sometimes is actually use n, right? This, I gave you a concrete example where n is 5, I think. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. So maybe that'll give you some kind of indication that as n grows, if n went up to 10 or 100 or so forth, try to get a sense of how many steps you would be taking, how many city blocks you'd be walking. Stopping in 5 seconds. 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. All right. All right, so heavyweight on B and D. B is O of N, and D is O of N squared. That's good because almost all the ones, actually all the ones that I've done like this so far have always been either N or N squared. So you've been sensitive to that. That's good. The question is, which kind of thing is this? Now, the total number of city blocks, right, if you've got 5 streets and 5 avenues, the area of that piece of the city is like n squared, right, or big O of n squared, because, you know, it's n blocks wide and n blocks high, you multiply them to get the total number of blocks. But notice that we're not walking over all the blocks, isn't it? What we're doing is we walk up one block, then over one block, then up one block, and over one block. So in this 5x5 example, how many blocks do we walk up? A total of 5. It's in a funny order, but there's 1, 2, 3. Go all the way from the bottom to the top without any repeats. So there's 5 steps up. How many steps across?
5.
Also 5. So the total is 10. So we walk 10, you know, 10 street blocks kind of thing. And how would that change if we doubled the size of the city, right? If we actually put another copy of the city, well, I guess not double the size. If we had, here's a 5x5 block. What if we expand it out so that there's now 10 streets and 10 avenues, and we're again going to walk a little drunk at one point, but we made it to the end. Apologize. So now how far did we walk? Well, not N, 10. So we went 20 this time. We ended up going 10 across and 10 up. So if this is n, we always end up going n streets and n avenues for a total of 2 times n, which is, ignoring the constants, n. It's big O of n. So you're right. There's an n and a 2, but they're not arranged the way that the majority have arranged it. It's actually 2 times n, and 2 there is a multiplicative constant. We just throw it away. All right. Compare that to this one. Here's another one. So again, the setup is the same. We've got n streets and n avenues, but now we're going to walk in a very different pattern. This is like what a mailman or a garbage pickup might have to do. We're going to drive all the way up the first street, go one block over, and then drive all the way down the next street, and then one block over, and then all the way up the next street, then one block over. So we're actually going, if you look, we've actually passed through all but one of the streets, and little pieces of the avenue, not very much of the avenues. So the question is now how much ground did we cover? Is it A, big O of log n, B, big O of n, C, big O of n log n, D, big O of n squared, and E, big O of 2 to the n? It's not visible at all. All right. 5 more seconds? 7 more seconds?
5, 4, 3, 2, 1. Okay, stopping. Oh, I don't think I can. There we go. All right, stopping. It'd be really embarrassing if I failed this class. All right, so what's going on in this case? So in this case, instead of taking more or less direct route up to the corner, we're going up and down and up and down and up and down. So how does that change things? Well, in this particular example, how far is it? I mean, this first street that we go up, how far is that? We start out at the bottom and we travel up 5 blocks to get to the top of the city. So we do that. These traversals of 5. And how many of them do we have? 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. So we have 5 of those. Then there's some additional streets that we've crossed. Going across avenues, there's little pieces. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. So in this case, we ended up going a total of 30. Okay. Now, you can't quite tell just from this example, is that 30 because it's 5 times 6, like n times 6, right? We're going to generalize this idea to n streets and n avenues. And it's hard to tell. Does this 30 come from taking a constant like 6 and multiplying it by 5, in which case this would be linear, big O of n, or is it because we're taking 5 and multiplying it, or n and multiplying it by n? And so here's how we have to figure that out. If we generalize this to a much bigger grid, it's now, say, n by n. Again, we're going to do this zigzag pattern. How long does it take? How many blocks do we traverse going this very first street? How long is that? That's n, okay? And how many times do we do that? Is it n or is it n minus 1? Because it seems like we're not doing this last street here. Yeah, that's okay because we're doing this one. So it really is a total of n. So we do n streets, streets of length n times. So it's n times n just for the streets. And what about for the avenues? Well, we have a little piece here, and then we have a little piece here, and we have a little piece here. But if you forget about where they are height-wise, it's really just walking straight across this grid. In terms of avenues, we're going just sideways that way, just to the end. So there really is a plus n here. So it's really n times n plus n. Now what is that? That's n squared plus n. Now when we do big O, we ignore the low order terms. So n squared goes faster than n. So this is big O, and we ignore any constants. There aren't any constants in this case. So we get big O of n squared. So this time, by kind of repeating the streets over and over again, we really are getting a quadratic distance that we're traversing. And that was the majority answer. Still getting random other answers. All right, but I'm hoping, when you see enough of these, you'll start to see that there's patterns. There's only certain combinations that we can actually make here. All right, so that was it for quicker questions. Let's see where we are. Now, where we left off last time is we were beginning to talk about how Google works. And in fact, the way we're going to talk about Google is in terms of 3 of the important components. There's a lot of really good ideas in Google that make it so fast and so useful and so big and general and powerful. But I'm going to talk about 3 main ones. And the first one is, how does it get the information in the first place? How does it know about our web pages? And I asked people to hypothesize last time different theories, and the theory that turned out to be true. Let's look at one more piece of information. So this is an experiment we did in this class over a period of weeks that I was scared wouldn't work, but it ultimately did work, so I'm very relieved. And it went like this. On September 22nd, we brainstormed about a word that was not in Google. And the way that we knew that it was not known to Google is that we made up the word, we typed it into Google, and it had no hits. So as far as Google was concerned, there's no web pages on the planet that had this word in it. And the word that we picked was Gieselrub. We in fact put 2 different words like that. We put the word Gieselrub on a page that was linked from the course page. Our course page has a link on it. You click on it, it takes you to a page that has the Gieselrub on it. But I also created another page that no page on the entire internet links to. And I put the word there that Google also didn't know about. That was Gieselrub with a J. So I put that on a page that I called Google Test 2.
And we waited a month. Actually, we checked on it, but nothing really happened. We waited a month, and still there was. If you search for either of these words in Google, you get nothing. Then finally, about a week later, on November 2nd, we typed in Gizorub with a G, and it took us to the page that we created on the Rutgers website, a link off of our course webpage. It still didn't know anything about Gizorub with a J. In fact, to this day, it still doesn't know anything about Gizorub with a J. But it does know about Gizorub with a G, and it's in fact exactly on that page that we created. So this kind of suggests maybe what's going on here, that it's not the case that as soon as you put up a web page into the fabric of the internet, that Google instantly knows all the words on that page, puts it in its index, and is ready to search for it. It really seems to take some amount of time before Google knows what's going on. And the reason for this is because the way Google finds stuff is it does web browsing all day long, 24 hours a day. It takes it about a month to search every page that's linked on the web. But it just keeps doing it over and over again. Every month, it's doing it again, and eventually it's going to find this page again and discover that it already has it. But it's just constantly surfing the web. Many, many, many computers, probably thousands of computers, that all day long just go out over the internet and like, oh, here's a web page I haven't seen before. Oh, look, there's links on that web page. Let's go to all of those too. And it just surfs all the time. There's a name for this kind of program. Has anybody encountered it? Yeah. A web crawler, right, and sometimes spider. It's a web crawler that does spidering. So it's actually, you know, why? Because it's sort of walking around on the World Wide Web. But it finds all kinds of stuff that way. And everything that it finds, it downloads to a computer at Google, and now it's got a copy of it. And now it knows the words on it, and it can tell anyone who asked, hey, do you know any web pages that have this word? Hey, no, I do. It's right here. So, which is pretty amazing, actually. This idea of crawling around on the web is actually a very general idea in computer science, not just in web search, but in lots of other problems when you need to see if things are connected to each other eventually. And this introduces the notion of graph theory. So I'm going to talk about graph theory now in the context of a little piece of the web. So here's 10 web pages with their URLs that are associated with the course in some way. And the links on those pages. So this is one of my courses that I've taught, I guess in 2006, CS442. On that page, there's a link to page 2, page 3, page 1, page 2, page 4, page 5, where the pages are numbered like this. Here's page 2. That's my home page with a little picture of me and the stuff that I do, which has links to other stuff like page 1, page 6, page 7, page 10. So I have a link from my home page to a course that I taught. It's not so surprising. Page 3 here is the web page of a TA who TA'd this class in the past. She's not one of the TAs this semester. Her home page had a link to the course page.